Well, I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the RPM subteam for Sunrise Data Review call on Wednesday, the 17th of April, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Zoom room. I would like to also remind all participants, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and if you would please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thank you, Michelle. And I will, this is Julie Hedlund from staff, and I'll just quickly go through the agenda. First item is the updates to statement of interest. Then I'll turn over to Michelle for a very brief introduction to Zoom. Then we'll go on to agenda item three, the development of preliminary recommendations, where we will continue the discussion on question three and related proposals, and also on question four and related proposal 11, and then move to question one, in conjunction with individual proposal number 9, and time permitting, to question 5A. And let me ask if there is anyone who has any other business. And noting that Ariel has just put the summary table into the chat as well. And I'm not seeing any hands. So let me ask, go back to item one and ask if there are any changes to updates to statements of interest. Also not seeing any hands. Let me go to Michelle for the Zoom introduction.
All right, thanks, Julie. For the Zoom features, I'm sure a few of you, a handful of you have become familiar already with it, but if you hover your mouse over to the bottom of your screen, you will see a list of options. So in order to raise your hand throughout today's call, you want to click on the participants, and that will pop up all the participants on the right-hand side who's logged in. You will see the option to raise your hand. Right below all of the names, you can lower your hand, raise your hand. And again, I'll go over at the very top of your screen to switch, toggle between different screens if you, if need be. Go to the top of your screen, it says view options with a little drop down arrow. It's located in black, and you'll see Ariel's name checkmarked at this time, as well as Julie has the agenda. So you can flip between screens. And then also, and to activate the chat feature, click on the chat button and you can chat privately to one-on-one with someone or to everyone. Back to you, Julie. And please chat me with any questions as well.
Thanks, Michelle. And I'll just note that several people have your phones unmuted. And so we do suggest that you mute your phone when not speaking, because I think we are, I was here catching a little bit of background noise. And to do that, you'll see, if you look at the participants list, you see your name, and to the right of that, well, you can either mouse over your name and you can click on mute, or you can go to the bottom of the screen, I think as Michelle mentioned, and mute as well. So with this, I believe I'm turning over to David McCauley, who's going to give a quick recap of last week's meeting.
Thanks, Julie and Michelle. Thanks very much. David McCauley speaking for the record. And I just want to, Greg and I are going to try doing something a little different, and that is that last week's co-chair who led the discussion might do a brief recap. It's not meant to be exhaustive. It's meant to hit the high points and just sort of set the table to refresh memories. And then, so what I'll say about last week's call is we discussed charter question three, including individual proposal number 10 from Susan Payne, in which she suggested a procedure for trademark owners to challenge designation of a domain name as premium, and she explained it well. Then some conversation took place in which, among other things, Jason expressed concern that the mechanism would be addressing outlier situations, might be a bit formal, and that maybe an informal approach that would allow the trademark holder and the registry operator to find ways to stop specific cyber squatting would be preferred. Greg spoke in his personal capacity and expressing concern over that kind of a soft solution. Phil weighed in his personal capacity, noted that pricing is at the heart of the issue that we're discussing in that context, and we have to exercise care in how far we go in such a discussion before lobbing the issue over to the sub-pro PDP. And he also mentioned that a proposal like this would need more detailed meat on the bones prior to being able to fly. Maxim mentioned that equal sunrise pricing might be a solution. This was mentioned in the context of best practice rather than a regulation. Claudio suggested getting input from ICANN compliance on this. And then we moved to question four, and Susan also had presented individual proposal number 11 to implement an obligatory PIC, public interest commitment, or a contract provision that the registry wouldn't act to circumvent the RPMs, especially compared to general availability pricing, and not do anything to undermine brand owner access to Sunrise. She explained the approach, and Maxim expressed some concern about would it be an issue with the picket fence, noted the contract party house would probably not favor this. Jason asked what standard would apply, would it be too subjective? Susan noted that it could be a little subjective, but mentioned that there are PICs and there are PIC DRPs, and panels sort through these things, that's their job. Kathy then sort of set the table for this week's discussion, asking that we run down sub-questions in charter question number four as they lay out a logical path. And I think Kathy was concerned that maybe the questions would give us a path that was a little bit more logical than the discussion seemed to be taking at the time. So these are illustrative of the discussion that we had. And what we're hoping to do is add focus here. And if any of this prompts you to consider making a comment, a counterproposal, a proposal, that's what the list is for, and the threads that we're putting out. Give that some thought. Be concise. Can do it in a sentence or two or a paragraph or two. Please do. With that, I will say that is a general summary, and it's over to Greg, who's going to be the leading co-chair on this call. Thanks.
Thank you, David. Thank you, staff, and all for attending and for that summary. So I think that leaves us starting with question three, or is it four at this point? I see a lot of scrolling going on in the screen.
Greg, hi, it's David speaking.
Yeah.
I actually think we are in question number four. I think, Julie, you can weigh in if you wish, but it was my recollection that we had gotten into four and Kathy had suggested we go through the sub-questions in four. I think she was referring to the final three-ish questions there. Thanks.
Well, thank you, David. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. Yeah, while we included a continued discussion on question three, if you all feel that that conversation has it has been exhausted or at least could continue in the threads on the list, certainly we should go ahead to question four. And thank you for that. And just to remind you all that staff have captured where we stand so far on those discussions in the summary table that Ariel is sharing. Thanks very much. And over to you, Greg.
Thanks. And looking back at three, I think that the recommendation there is in sufficiently good shape, not that it's, you know, final by any stretch of the imagination within the group, but it's in sufficiently good shape that we should move on and work on question four. And as Kathy suggested, you know, we should work through the sub-questions of question four as kind of a pathway or thought process for dealing with question four. And, you know, as well, we have individual proposal 11, but we should think, you know, first about whether we have a proposal, if any, coming out of, you know, our kind of combined discussion. So just to look at the subparts of question four, begins by asking, are registry operator reserved names practices unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark owners? After that, should section 1.3.3 of spec 1 of the registry agreement be modified to address these concerns? Should registry operators be required to publish their reserved names list? And what registry concerns would be raised by that publication? What problems would it be solved? And lastly, should registry operators be required to provide trademark owners in the TMCH notice and the opportunity to register the domain name should their registry operator release it? What registry concerns would be raised by this requirement? So with that table setting, I think we can look at the, you know, whether the question of whether a registry operator reserved names practices are unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark owners. I do think we had some discussion on this in the past, but it behooves us to pick up on that at this point. So hopefully I'll be able to manage the hands from the tablet, which is what I'm using now. Yeah, Maxim notes in the chat. We had some lengthy discussions about it in the chat. I think that we shouldn't completely rehash those. I think a lot of it echoes what was discussed in response to question three with regard to whether there were practices with reserved names that really, you know, first off, are they unfair? Not all reserved names are de facto unfair, I assume. But some may be, and some games may have been played by some registries, conceivably, with regard to reserved names, which were then released later as premium names or the like. But I'd like to see what others in the group, and we have a pretty good attendance this week, have to say about this point. So I'm looking for hands. And if there are any, I'm not seeing them.
Greg, hand from John McElwain.
Thank you. I see a hand from John, and I see a hand from Maxim. Go ahead, John.
Thanks. Hi, John McElwain, for the record. You know, with respect to this question, and I think I've made this point with others, maybe to parse it out a little bit, and the problem I have is with unfair, because I think everybody has their own definition of what unfair would be. I mean, I can let you know from personal experience, I've got several brand owners who have trademarks registered in the clearinghouse that could not take part in Sunrise because their names appeared on a reserve or in a reserve name list. Those trademarks are unique, but they are not, they are dictionary words or they are initials. You know, some folks may say that's not unfair. Everything it's really going to come down to what the definition of fairness is, but I can let you know that in several instances I personally have seen trademarks being blocked. You know, I think that that's going to be having some discussion around unfairness, or just at least coming to the conclusion that there are going to be marks that are going to be swept up in a reserve names list without a doubt. And that is just by virtue of brand names being also words that have other meanings. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Maxim.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you well.
Okay. Yeah, to just remind us about the discussions of the past, they were, first of all, concerns about fair. It's not one-sided games where, like, evil registries prevent everybody from doing this and it's not fair. All kinds of participants can be bad actors. For example, if 4D is granted, then we will see lots of situations where quite good name is going to be released for some reason. And then we magically see lots of new registrations in trademark clearinghouse. There will be correlations of these sorts. And about the requirement to publish reserved name lists, for some registries, it will not be possible. For example, we are blocking around 9,000 or 10,000 swear words combinations because it's we don't see it to fit mission of the CTGOTLD. And some of those words are trademarks. So guess some well-known four-letter word in English is going to be registered by this smuggling point. I'm not sure it's for benefit of the or for the public interest. And the same is for the generic terms, which are, I'd say, feed the mission of the TLD. For geos, it's, for example, metro, police, fire department or something like this. Lots of generic terms because basically cities were invented before the trademark law. So, for example, for the some grocery association, it could be some kind of fruits and vegetables. So it's not that simple. And for example, publishing our reserve list would cause us like violation of civil court. Basically, don't swear in public for legal entities. So it's not a simple thing. I would really recommend us to just take the transcripts of the previous discussions of these, because if we don't do it, it's just a loss of time. Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. Christine Doreen, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine Doreen for the transcript. I just wanted to weigh in really briefly with something I said on the last call. So for those of you who are on the last call, I apologize. You'll hear it twice. But you'll recall that when the original RPMs were created, there was a balance, right? And so I think the reason I was part of the drafting team that included the word unfairly here. And I think, yep, we can nitpick over what unfairly means, but it's here because we understand that reserve name practices might limit participation in Sunrise by trademark owners. But the point we were trying to get at here is we wanted the entire working group to think about balance and to think about the fact that, yep, in a few cases, in some cases, marks by their very nature or whatever might be put on a reserve names list, as Maxime pointed out, maybe they're, you know, profane in some jurisdictions or something. That could happen. The question is, on balance, is this such an overarchingly crushing problem that we should be amending the current RPMs to do something about it? And I don't think the data is clear that this is an overarchingly crushing problem that requires us to make a change. I think we look at the data and we see, yep, looks like it's happening. It was anticipated. We knew that when it was created some people's names might be suppressed here. So I think I just want to make sure that we don't go down the rabbit hole of finding a couple of examples that would completely tarnish the entire situation. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Maxim, is that a old hand? Susan Payne, please go ahead.
Hi, yeah, thanks, Susan. And I'm really reluctant to just start again a conversation, the same conversation that we had last week. But just to kind of reiterate that was some of these concerns that Maxim has been raising and that Christine has been raising was why I had suggested that maybe the path forward was a pick. A public interest commitment and one that then, a panel could consider and could be weighing up these nuances and determining whether, there was a reason why a name was on a reserved list, and that it's not an unfair practice. And that way it's not we're not granting some extension of the rights to trademark holders overall, but we're recognizing that there were a number of situations, and there were, where brand names were put on reserved lists, or put on a list that was reserved as a premium name to be released later when there was a big sort of marketing push on premium names or whatever, and that in some cases, you know, there was a reason why, you know, because it was Apple in the TLD of fruit. That's a fake example. And in some cases, there were not good reasons why. There was no sort of dictionary correlation, if you like, between the meaning of the trademark and the meaning of the TLD. And we can't fix all these problems, but we could recognize that it's possible for us, or it's possible for an implementation team to build a mechanism or to build a pick that would allow a panel to address this. And I know that there was discussion last week about, you know, this being too vague and us requiring the panel to be making these decisions. But that is what the picks are about. I mean, the picks, if you look at them, are all, you know, they require an assessment. And I think that would be a way to go on this. But I did also want to just flag that my proposal was not just limited to reserve name practices. I did also make the point that, you know, as I was suggesting, it could cover something like having the standard general availability pricing at $10 and the sunrise pricing at, you know, $3 million. That kind of, you know, complete disparity of pricing between sunrise pricing and general availability pricing, which I don't believe is going behind the picket fence. There is a recognition that ICANN is not meant to be controlling the pricing on new GTLDs, but you know, there is some balance. You know, because registry operators are also supposed to be offering these rights protection mechanisms. And so, you know, if methods are used to circumvent that, then that's something that should be possible to be addressed.
Thank you, Susan. I'd like you to think a bit about what the pick would say a bit more specifically. Not wordsmithing, but just kind of what the sense of it would be. You know, it could use words like unfairly or abusive or discriminatory or shocking the conscience or whatever it might be. And on the other hand, could also recognize that legitimate interests in various types of reserved names, you know, as mentioned, a GOTLD or a city TLD more specifically, you know, could have very good use for, you know, police, fire, sanitation, whatever, you know, mayor, et cetera, whether or not those are trademarks. But it's something to think about, to try to put a little bit of meat on the bones. While you're thinking about that, I'll go over to Maxim. Please go ahead.
And this is Kathy. Can I join the queue? Sorry, I can't raise my hand.
Gotcha, Kathy.
It's Maxim. Also, one of the ideas about balance. After all, we're not designing a system which is going to be manually regulated. It's not 200 years ago when everything was processed on paper. If we attach, two points. If we attach too much of manual operations to the system, it will not work properly. We will spend years trying to get a simple domain name. I'm not sure how it works. And the second thing, the words about circumvention, actually it works in two directions. Because situations where we're trying to regulate pricing, it's actually a circumvention of principles. It's a convention of picket fence. So we should be careful using this word. Thanks.
Hey, Greg, it's Claudio. Can I get in the queue?
Yes, I've got Kathy followed by Claudio. Kathy, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. I hope you can hear me. Okay, so first, I just wanted to alert everyone that question three has an answer. So question three is overlapping with question four on premium names and reserve names. Question 3A is, should registry operators be required to create a mechanism that allows trademark owners to challenge the determination that a second level domain, the second level name is a premium name or reserve name? And for some reason, the recommendation says that ICANN.org shall establish a uniform mechanism that allows trademark owners to challenge a determination by a registry operator that a second level name is a premium name or a reserve name during the Sunrise period. And what I remember is that we agreed, and I think it was Jason who talked at length about this, but that we agreed that trademark owners should be able to question a determination by a registry operator. And so now linking to question four, you know, some of the examples have already come out, the apple.fruit hypothetical, of course, police.nyc, windows.construction. So do, you know, is this, are these harms or are these, you know, is this unfairly limiting participation in the Sunrise by trademark owners who do have trademarks in those, but not in the dictionary words, this has been already been raised. So first, you know, what mechanism did we decide on, formal or informal? Second, the murkiness and the concerns that Christine raised in the chat, I think need to be elevated. And the third is that one area I do think, unless anybody's jumping up and down, that discriminatory pricing, that it's much more during Sunrise than during general availability. That's something that seems inherently unfair and something that we can address. But some of these other things, I'm not sure whether how formal a mechanism for challenging we created and how much cost and burden that's going to add onto the registry operators. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I think that, you know, we will be looping back, I think, to question three, where we have at least kind of a straw man recommendation, but clearly there are things to be discussed about it, as you have raised, and the straw man might start looking very different when we revisit him. So I've got Claudio followed by Jason and David.
Thanks, Greg. It's Claudio for the transcript. So yeah, just a couple of points on some of the things we've been discussing. In terms of your suggestion to Susan about adding some meat to the bones and some of the issues that we're talking here about here, I think there are going to be cases, one-off type cases, and some of the examples have been mentioned, where there's going to be a legitimate reason to reserve the name, and it's going to create a clash potentially with a trademark. So I think how we might address this is if there is a pattern of doing this, and that could be something that needs to be established. So if it's a name here and a name there, it might not be enough to trigger this mechanism. But if there is an extensive pattern of this taking place, and I think there have been cases of that in certain TLDs, that then we're really talking about a different situation in that context. Another point I wanted to make, just in general about the pricing concern and the ticket fence, is that there is a general principle in contract law that when you have two provisions in a contract and the contract is being interpreted in a way to render one of those provisions meaningless, essentially, that is generally disfavored. And so while ICANN may have a rule about not regulating pricing, that is not necessarily a rule that would prohibit pricing from ever being taken into consideration in the way the contract is being applied. And so I see those two things as being separate. And I also wanted to mention the point that Maxim has raised, and I think this has come up in several times, about the fact that there might be entries in the Trademark Clearinghouse that are pretextual and they're not necessarily with a trademark. I've heard that come up multiple times on some of these policy discussions that we're having. And I think something we should do is take a look at, there is an existing Sunrise dispute resolution policy to address those types of issues. And that is something that we could take a look at and enhance So if there is that type of gaming taking place, that we can enhance the policy that has been designed to address that. And so that's basically it. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Thank you, Claudio. Just one quick follow-up question. When you say that they're establishing a pattern or an extensive pattern, how would you categorize that pattern as a pattern of what? It can't just be a pattern of having a reserved name. So it must be something more.
Yeah. So, like, in other words, if a name was reserved and it clashed with a trademark, and that one example of that might not be sufficient to trigger this mechanism, and that there would need to be a pattern where you could look at the names that were reserved and say, well, this is just one of these generic examples where the names were reserved. I think Maxim mentioned the police example. But there were many names that were reserved that included a wide range of marks, fanciful marks and other types of marks, where it's pretty clear on its face that this is being done for ulterior reasons.
Claudio, go on to Jason. I'm not hearing you, and your phone is muted.
Greg, if I might, if anyone's using a cell phone or a regular phone, *6 unmutes you generally. *6 or *6, I forget.
Okay.
Me now?
Yes.
Yes, you can hear me? Okay.
Yes, Jason.
Sorry about
we can
that.
Hear you. Great. No,
you're
it's
with
hard
us.
To use new system.
Yes, well, Zoom is a great system, so we'll all get used to it. so thank you. What I was saying is that I think some of what Claudio said bears consideration further discussion. Certainly, again, one of my concerns is that we are over engineering something that again the data doesn't show or support widespread abuse. Yes, I see, and I do agree that there have been instances where there are abuses and nobody wants that. In other scenarios, there have been situations where I can say it appears that perhaps the registry operator had justification one way or the other. I do think that I don't know how we're going to describe it, but not predatory pricing, but this discriminatory pricing. If you Susan, I think, gave the example of $3 million in Sunrise and $20 at GA. Yeah, that's something that it may be something we could tackle, right? But when we get into the issue of reserves and why did a registry choose to reserve a whole swath of names, having consulted with other registries over the years, there are scenarios where a registry actually may be looking to avoid problems with cyber squatting. Okay, there's actually perhaps a justification that's actually in line with the brand in terms of trying to avoid a 99 cent or a $10 registration for a trademark, which would end up costing that brand owner more to pursue in other methods. So I just think it's worth really thinking hard and long and hard about, is there a serious problem here, and is this the best way to address it? It behooves us to do that because we're going to spend a lot of time, as we've said, putting meat on the bones and trying to create a standard that, good luck trying to really articulate a standard that's not going to appear as objective and analyzing every single action that a registry operator has taken. I think that's going to be a very difficult task for us to do successfully. So in sum, I'm not averse to tackling the issue, but I do think we have to look closely at, again, what Christine said earlier. What I've said and what others have echoed, is there real evidence of this? And then as a final point, not to put too fine a point on it, are we creating a mechanism that in the next round is really a moot point? That's not a reason not to do this, but how many of us really believe that the generic words are going to be registered in large measure in the next round and have large open strings? All those good words have probably already been taken. So I anticipate, as most of us probably do, that the next round is going to look very different than this past round. And you're probably going to see a lot more, let's hope, corporate registrations, smaller, mid-sized businesses securing their TLDs and doing good things with that, and much, much less of this generic open type of round that we had. As we know, donuts seem to have taken up everything. So, you know, go through the dictionary. I don't think there's a lot of great opportunity out there for a business case to get new TLDs. Again, that's not a reason not to tackle this, but again, it in my mind, it weighs against seeing a widespread problem in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. All good points and ones we should think about in terms of the degree of harm. I just think it's funny that in the domain name system, donuts eats you. In any case, maybe it's not that funny. David, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley speaking for the record, and I did think it was funny. I was on mute before. Anyway, I had put my hand up before you mentioned or spoke to Kathy's question. And so since my hand is up, I left it up. But I would like to talk about question three as she asked about it. And simply note that in my opinion, personal opinion, we did not reach agreement on a formalized mechanism last week. And the discussions, that's what these discussions are for. And the focus that we're calling for is we're having a chance to discuss these questions now. As you said, Greg, we'll loop back. But there was some divergence on that. I don't think we've reached agreement yet. In those instances where we can reach agreement and either make or agree that we will not make a recommendation, that'll be outstanding. But I think folks will see mail from us in the coming weeks saying, you know, this is what we're hearing around this question, you know, agreement, non-agreement, divergence, whatever. And so anyway, I just wanted to support what you said to it, Greg. Thanks.
Thanks, David. And on top of that, I would expect that what we have in question three will be released as a discussion thread by staff so that we can, rather than putting this on a shelf and looping around to it at another time, discussion on that can continue as well as the discussion on four. So let's see, my list of hands disappeared. Jason, is that a new hand or an old hand? The only hand I have at the moment.
Oh, that's an old hand. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. We're all getting used to Zoom and how to unhand yourself.
Yep. And actually, I can't unhand it. So where I go down here? Sorry.
You see? Go down to the bottom, or you go to the place where you raised your hand in the first place, and you can unraise it there.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, and it's telling me to raise my hand. So.
Well. Yeah, I'm not first level support here. I'm zero level support. In any case, looks like we've come to a resting point here, which actually will bring me back to Susan and the question I asked her earlier about what a pick with some meats. Sorry, too many Bing Rames commercials for Arby's. Apologies for the U.S. reference. Susan, what are you thinking a pick might look like? And especially thinking about a pick that won't create more problems than it solves. We've heard, you know, a number of concerns about burden as well.
I typed something in the chat and I'm now trying to scroll back to find it. But recognizing that this is very much drafting on the fly and it could probably be done better. I just said something like that the registry should not act in a manner calculated to circumvent the rights protection mechanisms or the sunrise. But I don't think it needs to be as specific as sunrise, including by means of discriminatory pricing. But I think it's something that obviously needs some work in terms of the language, and I'm sure people will start objecting to that.
Thanks, Susan. I think, you know, the PIC probably should also think in terms of meat on the bones about countervailing point, which is, you know, identifying you know, names that are reserved essentially in good faith or for legitimate interests, such as, and there was quite a bit of discussion around this in the first, before the first round of, you know, the police, fire, and garbage sort of things, and names of prominent streets or landmarks, et cetera, for geos, and whether they're, at least from a PIC point of view, those should be, you shouldn't be able to challenge Broadway.nyc, even if Broadway is your trademark, if there's a decision made to try to create a taxonomy involving major street names, just, you know, as an example. Maxim, please go ahead.
Actually, Maxim Alzoba for the transcript purposes. Actually, PIC is public interest commitment, and we're talking about RPMs. So if we are talking about addendum to RPMs, like the addendum for QLPs, which was, it's fine. But effectively, we are talking about trademark owners' interest commitments. It's not public interest. So I am strongly object to using PICs for this. If we are going to, anyway, registries have to obey right protection mechanisms. And if we are going to make, for example, second amendment to right protection mechanisms, yes, it's more or less in line with the mission of our group. But I strongly object against going to PICs, which were effectively a result of GEC actions, if we don't want to mix GEC into this. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. I see Susan's hand, I believe, is back up or is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I put my hand up to respond to you, Greg, which was just that I recognize the comments you were making, but to my mind, those kind of scenarios that you were talking about would be ones where this challenge would be unsuccessful. And I'm not sure that it's helpful to try and think about all the scenarios where to try and set out a list of examples of cases where it wouldn't, you know, where someone wouldn't be successful in their complaint. I don't know. I'm sorry. It's 7:45. This is many hours of calls now, and I can't draft on the hoof. But I'm not sure that the greater the specificity that you try and draft it, that I'm not sure that makes it more helpful. I think it makes it less helpful. To my mind, if we're talking about circumventing and discrimination and so on, it's in the nature of the panel assessment that they would not fine for the brand owner because there is a justification.
Thanks, Susan. I'll respond, and maybe this feels a little bit like I don't have my chair hat on, so I'll say I don't. I was thinking more of high-level principles and not detailed lists, because I agree with you. Every time you try to detail all the different ways in which something would happen, you will fail, because the universe is full of too many options. But I'm, you know, thinking more generally about, you know, a legitimate interest or, you know, tied to the legitimate purposes of the TLD. I don't think you'd have to make a list of every public service that a city offers to come up with the idea that public services can be reserved or reserved to be used by, which maybe not be a reserved name per se, a reserve for the use of the municipality. So I think there may be a path forward there. Not saying that we have to follow that path, but I think that's more what I'm thinking of there. And I think overall, I'd rather not let everybody have their day in court who's going to lose. I realize that at some point you may cut off too many people, but you know, these are not meant to be kind of open forums for anybody who is annoyed about not having their trademark available to them. Again, it comes, I think, to my mind, it comes down to reasoning. I see Maxim has found the cup of coffee status icon. So Maxim is having a cup of coffee. I don't have any hands up at the moment. I think we have some idea that there might be a pick here. We have some idea that there might not be enough of a problem to have a pick here. We have some idea that a pick might cause problems. We have somewhat of an idea that maybe this isn't something to be dealt with in a pick because it's not an issue of public interest. So those are, you know, I think all open questions. So I guess in terms of coming up with a preliminary recommendation here, we could look to drafting a straw man pick. But at the same time, I think also looking to the question of justification for dealing with this and what kind of hurdle one would have to get over to challenge. If some TLD reserved the 1,000 most valuable trademarks as listed in Trademarks Magazine, even though they were, you know, dot fruit, one might have a question at least about what's going on there and whether we should have a remedy for that. Kind of strikes me as the question here, a big part of the question here. But I think that kind of brings us to the end of 4A and brings us to 4B, which is should section 1.3.3 of spec 1 of the registry agreement be modified to address these concerns? And I have to admit that I did not pull up the registry agreement, though I think I have some lying around, to see what 1.3.3 is. So if staff or another participant would like to refresh our recollection, that would be helpful. I am trying to grab it right now. You can never find a good registry agreement when you want one. Okay, here we go. And Microsoft Word has stopped working. Okay, wonderful. John has put the link in the chat.
Hey, I just realized that was the amendments. I'm getting the base registry agreement up. One sec.
Okay. Christine reminds us that the RA cannot be unilaterally amended. And here I have it. Now I need to find spec 1. 1.3.3 is under the section. Section 1 is consensus policies. 1.3 says such categories of issues referred to in section 1.2 of this specification shall include without limitation. And 1.2 deals with consensus policies. 1.3.3 says, reservation of registered names in the TLD that may not be registered initially or that may not be renewed due to reasons reasonably related to, one, avoidance of confusion among or misleading of users, two, intellectual property, or three, the technical management of the DNS or the internet, e.g. establishment of reservations of names from registration. So that is 1.3.3, which I see John has also pasted into the chat. So we at least have a baseline here. And let me go back to the summary table. So the question is, should section 1.3.3 be modified to address these concerns? These concerns, I guess, being reserve names unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise. And so let's see, do we have any hands up on this now that we've figured out what the question is?
Greg, this is Claudio. Can I make a comment?
Claudio, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I might be misinterpreting this, but it's this provision is there to basically say the registry can reserve names related to its own intellectual property. I think that's kind of outside the scope somewhat of what we're discussing. But I could be misinterpreting this. But I kind of was reading this as somewhat of an affirmative obligation that the registries could go ahead and do that. But I'm not sure if that's correct.
Claudio, yes. 1.3.3 certainly doesn't, without context, lend itself to an easy discussion.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other things that under 1.3 are principles for allocations of registered names, such as first come, first serve, prohibitions on warehousing. Also maintenance of access to accurate and up-to-date information concerning domain name registration. That's quite a nostalgic reference. So basically, this goes to certain kind of some standard actions of a registry operator or potential action. And it may be that rather than referencing 1.2 in 1.3, it should have been 1.2.4 or maybe 1.2.2, which are consensus policies relating to functional and performance specs for the provision of registry services, or registry policies reasonably necessary to implement consensus policies relating to registry operations or registrars. Now, really, 1.3 really seems to be kind of a callback to 1.2.4, trying to carry out consensus policies. So I guess the question is, how would one change 1.3.3, if at all? Based on that context. Maxim, please go ahead.
Actually, it's about consensus. This bit of text is about consensus policies and what they can and cannot do. Because if you go to 1.4, you will see that 1.4.1 prohibits limiting the prices of registered services, for example. So I'm not sure why are we going to look into the way of how consensus policies work. It's definitely out of scope of this group. It might be relevant to Geneso Council, but not to this group. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. good question. The only answer I can give is because it's in the charter questions or the agreed versions of what started out as the charter question. But it may be that your answer is essentially the answer to this, unless folks have some other idea. Anybody else? Susan Payne, please go ahead.
Yeah, I think I'm with Maxim here. I've never understood this question. I mean, this is a list of, this is a list of consensus policies. And so I don't see how we could amend that list. Now, perhaps what it's really asking us is, do we want to, within the scope of that list of consensus policies, create one or amend one that exists? But we can't change the list of what's considered a consensus policy, I don't think, in this RPM working group. But Mary's got her hand up, so maybe she can help us.
Mary, please help us. We're wandering in the desert.
Hi, everyone. It's Mary. That's very flattering, Greg. I'm not sure if I can. But to the extent that Section 1.3.3, in fact, everything in 1.3 relates, as you said, Greg, to 1.2. The particular points in 1.2 in terms of the scope of consensus policies, I believe those essentially reflect what is in the bylaws. So essentially what you see in 1.2 of Spec 1 here carries over what is defined in the bylaws as the scope of the policies. And so in the sense that that's background information, that also relates to Christine's point about amending this particular section. I think my point from the staff side is that it's a broader point and it touches actually on the scope of consensus policies, which are reflected in the bylaws.
Thank you, Mary. I think my next hand is David McCauley. David, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg. It's David speaking for the record, and I'm speaking in my personal capacity here. I just want to say I agree with what was just recently said by all the speakers, especially Christine and Chad, Maxim, and Susan. And I think it's an unfortunate charter question, 4B. But I will also say that I think one of the things that's causing us to struggle here is there's so much overlap between charter questions 3 and 4, and we're trying to address each specifically that I think we're getting ourselves tied in knots. Perhaps, I don't know. I think the discussion is good. The discussion around what is right here in this issue of pricing and reserve names. But I think, Greg, when you and I and staff come together to try and sort out how we come up with summaries of these things, as you mentioned earlier in the call, that we'll do, you know, in the coming weeks, we might try and draw these together and see if there's proposals that make sense in light of both of the questions. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks, David. So it seems like we're coalescing here that that this is, you know, probably about beyond the scope of the working group to change this, especially because it ties into the bylaws and definitions of consensus policy. And so we, you know, if we were going to make to recommend changes to consensus policy, which of course we can, it wouldn't just be making a change to spec one of the RA. You know, we'd be doing something different. So we'd be dealing with it on a whole different plane. So I think that in and of itself, the answer is that modifying section 1.3.3 is outside the scope of the group, you know, at least as a discrete action that could be taken or not taken. I don't think we can just recommend a change to 1.3.3 in the abstract. If anything, it would have to change because something more fundamental had changed around consensus policy elsewhere. So I'm not sure if that's a something that has broad support, but certainly don't see anybody who is supporting a change to 1.3.3 or any kind of specific change to it. So I'll take Maxim, and then I'll unless Maxim, I think Maxim will just pound this into the ground with the final nail. Go ahead, Maxim.
Yes, if we scroll down a bit, I believe the prohibition is in 1.4.4.
Says that in addition to the other limitations on consensus policies, they shall not modify the provisions in the registry agreement regarding fees paid by registry operator to ICANN, if I'm reading the right. I'm not sure that that's germane exactly, but I think even without that, I don't think we have the ability to change 1.3.3 as such. But I don't think this is going to the issue of fees paid. But in any case, since we have zero support for, we have no straw man for changing 1.3.3, zero support for changing it, and for whatever reason, you know, a cluster of reasons, the view that 1.3.3 probably cannot be changed by this group as a matter of scope, I think we should bury 4B and move on to 4C. Especially since we're now down to 20 minutes or so of non-AOB time. 4C is, should registry operators be required to publish their reserve name lists? What registry concerns would be raised by that publication? What problems would it solve?
Greg, this is Kathy. Happy to go into the queue.
You are the queue. Please go ahead.
Okay, I am the queue. So I think we did discuss this earlier, and Maxim told us a lot about reasons not to publish the reserve names list that would include illegality under local law. Can we link, is this a legitimate link of questions 3 and 4, that we create some kind of questioning mechanism, not necessarily challenge mechanism since that sounds more official, but questioning mechanism that would include premium names and reserve names so that a trademark owner can reach a registry and at least ask about why they can't register a trademark that's in the trademark clearinghouse. So again, I think we have an answer to 4C that's about why registries shouldn't be required to publish their reserved names. And if we need to amplify it or provide additional information, I'm going to volunteer Maxim, but I assume you could do that. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. I've got John McElwain.
So, John McElwain, for the record, I guess this, I'm going to echo what Kathy said, I think it would be a great idea to publish the reserve name list. It caused a lot of problems for me and my clients during Sunrise with not being able to obtain a domain name and not knowing why. But I would like to hear the legitimate reasons for not publicizing that. So I'll turn over the floor to Maxim.
Maxim Malzoba, for the record. Yeah, the short thing is some registries, actually, they allowed you to check if the name could be registered or not. Basically, why, who is, where you had answer that this domain cannot be registered. It's a good sign that it's in the reserved list. But it was not obligatory, so it vary from TLD to TLD. And about the reasons why not publishing, it also vary from TLD to TLD. That's it. It's up to jurisdiction in which this legal body is established. So what might be problem for some might not be problem for others. But if we're trying to create something universally applicable, it's better to stick to something which doesn't cause lots of issues. Thanks.
Greg, it's Claudio. Can I
hear? You're in the queue after David McCauley and Christine Durain. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley for the record. I just wanted to follow up on what Kathy said, and I think what I heard, Kathy, was that you would suggest we move from a challenge mechanism in Proposal 10, I think that's what you're talking about, to an inquiry mechanism. And if that's the case, I don't think you're a fan of the threads, but if there's any chance you could sort of crystallize that suggestion, if I've got it right, you know, in a sentence or two or three, and send it to the list, that might be quite helpful for us to sort of coalesce all this. And if it's possible, maybe I didn't get it right, but I thought that's what I heard. Thank you.
Thanks. This is Greg. And before I go to Christine, I'm just a brain drizzle on my part is whether the querying mechanism would allow a query as to whether a name was on the list. I think Maxim said that was possible in some cases, if not others. But maybe also queries about whether, you know, the trademarks, for instance, trademarks have been chosen for because they're trademarks and put on the reserve names for that purpose. You know, have to think about what kind of queries or inquiries could be made and whether, you know, could avoid the hassles that that John's clients, among others, I'm sure, experience without kind of just full public publication. And maybe this could also be published upon, you know, request or some sort of methodology that would not cause anybody to break any obscenity laws. So we'd have to think about all those things. I've got Christine and then I think John and then Maxim.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine Durain. So a couple of, I guess, points of information about reserve named lists. And I kind of, I guess I'll start with John's question in the chat about why the lists varied from TLD to TLD. And it's because they're part of the confidential business plans. Different registry operators have different strategies for why names are reserved. Some reserved a vast number of names for various reasons, intending to maybe meter them out slowly. Others reserve very few. And people reserve names for various reasons, semantic reasons. So if you have a TLD, we will pick on, because Amazon has .bot, let's pick on .bot. One thing we might have done, and I was not part of the person that made the list, so I can't tell you for sure how we did it, but we might have gone through and used like a word generator to figure out words that end in the characters B-O-T to figure out what names would be sort of have a semantic meaning, like row.bot or something, and then put those on a reserved names list because that would maybe be super valuable and people would find that interesting and amusing. We might have reserved profanities. We may have reserved names of specific figures. We, you know, registries may reserve names for a lot of, because their local laws, as Maxime points out, may require them to not have certain names be registered as domain names. All of those reasons might be unique by jurisdiction, might be unique by registry operator, or might be unique by TLD. So it does, it is a totally different list in a variety of different circumstances, which is why the list is varied. So then once the registry operator creates that reserved names list, it is not a static list. So at any moment, 10, 100 times a day, the registry operator can add or drop names from the reserved names list. And it basically just means names that it's basically blocking from registration at this point. It's not doing anything with those names. It's just not offering those names for sale right now. The 100 names referred to in 2.6 is names that the registry operator is reserving to itself for its own use that's not considered a transaction for the purposes of billing. And those names, once you use up your 100, you can't add or drop. Those are gone. Once you spend them, they're gone. And the two totally different lists. When we talk about reserve names, we just talk about names that the registry operator is choosing not to reserve at this time and may release in the future at any given point. Those names are subject to the claims period, which is a totally different conversation. But hopefully that'll help as to what sort of some of the practical problems might be with requiring those lists to be published. Where do you publish them? How do you update them? How do people access them? And most importantly for the registry operator, we can detail confidential business plans as to how you want that TLD to be used in the future by determining which names are being withheld from registration at this point. Hope that helps. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Very helpful. John and then Maxim.
Greg, I think I was in the queue after Christine. It's Claudio.
Oh, that's right. I should have noted that. Claudio, no, go ahead.
No worries. Thanks a lot. It's Claudio for the transcript. Yeah, so, and I'm absorbing some of the things that Christine just said, which was a very helpful intervention. But I was initially looking at it the same way John did, in that there was a great deal of value in having transparency in the registration practices and of registry operators, which I think is something already embedded in the contracts, that the registration policies are clear and transparent and non-discriminatory. So I think it's something that furthers that objective. And, when I was thinking back to the way the RPMs, how this all came about, the way the RPMs were ultimately implemented was actually a very convoluted process. And maybe staff can confirm this, but to the best of my recollection, the fact that registries could reserve an unlimited number of names was not something that came out until the final RPMs document was published, which was actually after the applications were submitted, a good deal afterwards. And so I don't think this was something that was taken into account when registry operators applied for their strings. But, Christine certainly and Maxim mentioned some good points about concerns that could arise. And I just wonder if there's ways we could address that and kind of find a middle ground. And to provide an example, if there is an issue with local law, then, we certainly don't want registry operators to violate local law. And that should be, if it's not already an exception, that should be one that should be part of the process. So if it violates local law, then those names wouldn't have to be published. Maybe something similar could be introduced to address Christine's point about confidentiality. But overall, I do see a lot of value in publishing these names, because otherwise we just don't know what's really going on. And if there is gaming, or even if it's just a small number of registry operators reserving names for illegitimate reason, it's just very hard to get a window into that. And so just wanted to mention that. Thanks.
Greg, you might be on mute.
I was unmuted by the host, thankfully. So I was just saying that before moving on, it strikes me that since we are the Sunrise subteam, that really our concern as a subteam is only with the effect that reserved names have on Sunrise, and that some of the discussion we've been having, interesting though it is, relates to how reserved name issues might arise or not, during general availability or other parts besides Sunrise. So we might want to narrow this discussion, because I think the question might be whether reserve names are being used to thwart Sunrise as an RPM or something along those lines. Not sure if that's just a question, if that scratches the itch that John is mentioning, or if that goes too far. But just thinking that we need to make sure that we stay within the Sunrise context. John, please go ahead.
Thanks, John McLean, for the record. So I think I'm pretty much just going to echo what Claudio said, touting on today's call, is that it, and as Maxim also said, it varies from registry to registry, maybe even registrar to registrar, the information you get back when you try to register in the Sunrise your client's trademark in a TLD. Oftentimes you just get a note unavailable for registering. You don't know if that's because somebody else got it in the Sunrise before you, or what's going on. There's no way to figure that out. no easy way to figure it out. You have to end up going to an ICANN meeting and sitting down with the particular registry and you know, working that kind of thing out. And it'd just be nice maybe if there was some sort of visibility in it. I don't still don't understand the confidentiality concerns. I don't think, but you know, my main point is being able to figure out why a mark that is registered and available for Sunrise registration can't be registered in the Sunrise. So I think that fits within the scope of our remit. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Maxim.
Maxim Alzoba for the record. First of all, I would like to underline that there is an assumption that registries, they know the trademarks. No, they're actively prohibited from doing that. We're not allowed to, actually, it was a big deal to allow registries to contact TMCH for example string, basically the particular example, which was artificial, yes? Because the registries are prohibited from contacting TMCH, and we do not know who are there. We cannot check. And yes, right protection mechanisms are prohibiting us from that. So it's one of the things. The another thing is basically reserved lists are both entries of databases, real-time databases, and procedures around those databases. And the mechanisms are vary a lot from registry to registry. It's software platforms, it's yeah, coders or developers who write code. Each one of them, they invent crazy things to their liking. So if we're trying to, I'm trying to understand, to give you the analog from the real world. It's like trying to prevent persons from having certain entries in their phone books. Yeah, it's direct analog. So if we're trying to regulate something which actually works real time, first of all, it will considerably slow all software platforms of all registries. Second, we have to be extra careful to prevent situation where, for example, some bad actor registers a trademark which is equal to some kind of technical term which allows them to have the entry point for cyber attack in all TLDs at the same time. I'm not sure we're going to construct this backdoor. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. John, is that an old hand?
Sorry, old hand. I'll take it down.
Okay, so have no hands, and I'm not sure. We have a bunch of issues. I don't know that we've coalesced. We certainly don't have broad support for anything at this time. I'm not sure if we've coalesced on, I think the inquiry method shows some promise and might be something that could be crafted and, you know, meet concerns about confidentiality or, you know, business practices, proprietary business practices or the like, outright publication. No, obviously there's some support for it, but I'm not hearing broad support. So I'm not sure that we have a straw man on this, but I think as David invited Kathy, you know, if we could think about the inquiry mechanism, you know, that might, you know, meet some of the concerns here in a potentially balanced fashion. And again, going back to the higher level concern of just, you know, if the concern is avoiding thwarting Sunrise through targeted use of the reserved name list, that may be some way to deal with that specifically. And I understand what Maxim said about not being able to look into the TMCH. I'm concerned that there may have been some actors who did, in fact, you know, look into the TMCH, but let's just assume, obviously, that the good ones, you know, the good actors did not, but there are plenty of other lists of valuable trademarks and that could be somehow used. But again, there's a bunch of competing concerns and issues here without necessarily a clear path forward. So hopefully we will see if we can develop something on this. You know, right now it seems like there's maybe just the one limited path forward, unless, you know, there's, you know, somebody wants to advance a specific mechanism and see if it gets traction, but right now I'm not seeing it. I suppose we should be looking at individual proposal 11 before we leave this question behind. And then perhaps we're also supposed to look at 4D, apologies about that. Should registry operators be required to provide trademark owners and TMCH notice and the opportunity to register the domain name should the registry operator release it? What registry concerns would be raised by this requirement? So we have that question, which to some extent I would say is not part of, it may not be part of the sunrise period, so it could happen in sunrise or after sunrise. But in any case, we've come to 3:26 in the AOB time, so I think we need to cut this fascinating discussion short. So I've got a staff hand up. I'm not sure I've got Maxim's hand up as well. Don't know if that's an old hand, but let's go to staff.
Thank you very much, Greg. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and we thought we might just take a couple minutes to talk about the use of email threads to help continue the discussion from today's call. And so for this, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Ariel.
Thanks very much, Julie. This is Ariel for the record. So as you can see on the screen, I'm sharing a draft message to open the discussion thread. And you can see that staff will include the draft preliminary recommendations and tentative answers that we have captured up till last call, which is the text that you saw today on the screen and the one that we sent this morning. So that in the interest of time, we'll distribute that language, and then you can continue the discussion on the email thread. And then also for each charter question, there will be one thread, and then we will include the relevant individual proposal as well. And then for the individual proposal, there are specific questions we're hoping the sub-team can answer, is that whether the sub-team will support recommending the proposals to be included in the initial report, and whether there's any modification to the preliminary recommendations in light of the individual proposal, and whether there's any additional recommendations should be made. So we hope the sub-team can engage in that discussion on the list and then answer these specific questions. And another thing we want to mention is that the discussion thread will be open tentatively till mid-April, so 15th of May. And if there's a further commenting provided after that deadline or outside the discussion thread, that will be not be taken into account. So we want to note that. And then in the meantime, staff will check the transcript, the chat, and the recording when we compile our summary, and we will update the preliminary recommendation and tentative answers after the call. And once the updated version is available, we'll also put that in the thread as well. So these notes for now. And Julie and Mary, do you have any additional comments?
Ms. Julie, I have nothing more to add. Over to you, Greg.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Ariel. So in the minute we have left, just encourage everyone to latch on to those threads so that we can kind of keep our work cycle moving. Be prepared to move, you know, hopefully finish question four, which we really more or less done, but let's see what happens on the threads. And then move on to the next question, which hopefully we can prime the pump for question five by working on it on the threads during the week. I see a hand from my co-chair, David. I will acknowledge your hand.
Greg, thanks. It's David McCauley speaking. Just a real quick note to the members on the call. If you have any questions about Zoom, and I do, I've had a frustrating call in that respect. If you want, you can send them to me. I plan on sending a question or two to staff to try and help get an answer, and I'll probably send it on Friday. If you want to roll them together, just send me your questions, and I'll include it in my email. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David, for volunteering to collect a list of questions. It's very helpful, and I certainly have some questions of my own. So with that, I think we can call this meeting adjourned, stop the recording, and all leave the room. Thank you all. And
thanks,
goodbye.
Greg.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Bye.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.